Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We're so glad you're back for part two with Diane Comer. This was so fun when Cheryl and I came in studio today. Cheryl was just almost bouncing out of her seat because when she met Diane, she just felt like, we're going to be friends. And this was my first time meeting Diane, and she had to give me a hug for another good friend of both of us, which is Melanie Dobson, who we had on the program. So look up Melanie Dobson's episodes, and she was someone I met years ago through the writing circles. Diane, you started us in the first episode with your growing up years, how you came to know the Lord. And there were so many things Cheryl and I could relate to because of that era. But what I really loved was the beauty of how the Lord drew you through a group of teenagers. That's very dear to my heart. That love and grace and just that those teenagers were demonstrating who Jesus is. And that's irresistible. And you came to know the Lord and then were married at a young age. And I'm sorry, do we just start
he'll
over?
Just, no, he'll just cut that part out. Keep going.
I thought I had it off. Okay. And that
you were married at a young age and brought baggage, unknown baggage, into the marriage that you didn't realize that was pre-Jesus, but had just decided to stay. You know, it's kind of like those things that you, have you ever gone on a trip and realized, how did this get in my suitcase? What am I doing with this?
Yes.
And I feel sometimes like that's what happens when you get married. You think it's all gone. You think you've packed all the right things and
I'm
you
so
open your suitcase.
Now. Yes.
Right. And you realize, wait a second. How did this get in my suitcase? Yeah. What am I still doing with these things?
Yes. Or I didn't even know this was part of my wardrobe,
right?
To keep the metaphor going,
right?
I wasn't even aware because a lot of times growing up, you blame it on your parents, and yeah, maybe that it started with them, but we're responsible for how we respond, right? So, I came in with bitterness. I came into our marriage and a sense of rejection and prickliness. It made me a really hard woman to be married to those first couple of years.
Okay, this is so hard to believe because I loved you from the first time I talked to you. And but that's how thoroughly God works, right?
Yes.
Well, let's be honest. Weren't all of us a difficult person to live with our first few years of marriage?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to think it
Husbands
was him.
And wives. I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
Well, ask
I know.
Brian and see what he has to say.
No, Brian and I, we got in a fight one time over which one of us was more humble. So that kind of tells you where we were at.
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness.
Our first really big fight, first month into marriage, is I bought ice cream in a square container. But, you know, don't you know, it has to be in a round container.
Doesn't
the good ice cream comes in the round container. It was a big fight. So, yes, we totally understand, Diane.
We got in so many big fights. I couldn't even name just
the
one.
The silliest things. So, yes, anyone listening who feels like, I thought I was the only one. No, you're not.
And to
this
think
is how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you said earlier in the first program that you've been married now 47 years.
Yes.
So, and you know, I'm 46 and Robin is 50.
Almost,
49.
Almost 49.
49.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously God was in it.
Yeah.
And he was working through it.
Yeah.
Kind of to expose me to me.
Yeah.
To show me,
absolutely.
You know, when it says the Lord proved them or the Lord tested them, you know, we've all learned because we're Bible students that that's really God was showing them who they were. God already knew who they were, but he goes, I want to show you. Here's a mirror.
Yeah.
What you're really like and how you react, because he doesn't want those things.
No.
He only brings us to the surface, not as our identity, but to say these aren't your identity.
Yeah. Yes.
So
that's good, Cheryl. And don't you feel like if iron's going to sharpen iron, sparks are going to fly?
Yeah.
Amen.
So here we go. Okay, Diane, tell us. Back to you.
Yes.
I love this. I think this is really important. And I think we should be telling the younger generation that it's really hard at first when you get
married. Oh, so hard.
And that's normal and okay and part of the process of maturing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what happened to get you to begin the changes that happened.
So I'm sure you wrote a book about grace.
Yes.
And I underlined and underlined and underlined.
So
page after page after page, same thing, if you haven't really experienced grace, especially growing up, or from other actual skinned people, it's very hard to understand the grace of God. So even though it was thoroughly taught at my church, I couldn't hear it. And so I was all about rules. I still tend to be, I make rules for myself for every little thing. And it's a way of controlling things, no doubt about it. And so I determined, I was reading through my Bible, and I got the impression, probably more Old Testament than New, that if I would be a very good girl and follow all the rules, including the add-ons that I was putting there, about how to dress, how to behave, how to not do this, how not to do that, how to be a mom, then God would bless me. And by that, going back to the 70s, I took a beautiful statement out of this Four Spiritual Laws booklet and turned it into my rule. And that statement was, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. And I thought, okay, I know how to do this. I follow his rules. I make these sacrifices, and he will give me a wonderful life. And totally was going according to plan, because I was ignoring all these blow-ups with me and my husband, because just like I had blamed my mom, I now was blaming him. So not a lot of self-reflection until my third daughter was born, and I had gotten a not very serious case of pneumonia when I was pregnant with her. And I thought, I'm not hearing things well, but after she's born, I'll go in and see the doctor, and he will give me a pill to make, I have water on the ear or something, to make it go away. So I waited till she was born, and she was 6 weeks old, and I went into the audiologist, ear, nose, and throat doctor, and only to walk out with a prognosis, basically, that, Diane, you're going deaf. You're losing your hearing.
Wow. And you're only, what, 20?
26.
Oh, my goodness. 26. And three children.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just stunned. My first doctor was probably a genius, but did not have, what did they call it, good bedside manner.
Yes.
Not an emotionally aware person. So he just, stated as fact, and I walked out of there just stunned. And I had no context for this in my faith, basically, that God would allow me to suffer in such a way. And then,
of course, been a rule follower. You've done everything right. God owes you. Like, how could he allow this? You're a good girl. Yes.
This is not a wonderful life. Yes. He promised to me.
That's right. Yes.
And then, of course, people say all the most unfortunate things, God told me he was going to heal you. And then my rejected, an early childhood of feeling rejected, I brought all that into my relationship with God. Even to the performance thing. I read his Bible every morning because I'm a good daughter and I want him to approve of me. So long story short, for a couple of years, I really, really struggled. While I'm losing, I lost most of my hearing between age 26 and 30.
Wow.
By 30, I was wearing the biggest, ugliest hearing aids they make. They call them deaf aids, just to give some sound.
Wow.
And just, I have three young children.
Yeah, not to hear their voices.
No.
Yeah.
And I'm facing just a silent future.
Yeah.
And people, again, they tie it up with a bow. One of the things that was said to me that seemed offensive at the time, but God is so redemptive. Somebody said, Diane, God is going to use this in so many people's lives. And my first thought was, what kind of a father hurts one daughter to help another?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave that one right there because there's an end of that story.
Yep.
But so I was so angry. Remember, I talked about a heritage of anger. My anger didn't tend to be like an explosive rage as like my mom's. But now I say I was like a pistol with a silencer on the end. It was stuffed in me. And even my kids, looking back now, and they'll tell me now, could feel it and didn't understand what it was.
Mm.
And I basically got to the point of praying and praying and praying and waiting and hoping and believing. And it was getting worse and worse. So finally, Phil suggested I go into the elders and have them anoint me with oil and pray for me, like James 5 suggests. And I went into that meeting on the inside saying, okay, God, here's your last chance. If you won't listen to me, maybe you'll listen to these men. And these men were all my friends. Phil is a pastor of this church. And but if you still don't hear, that's it. I'm done. And I look back now and just shudder to think what it would have happened to me had he not met me there. But went into that room, surrounded by my friends, elders. They anointed me with oil and began to pray for me. And one of them, a good friend, one of the men said, Diane, do you have any sin to confess? Before we get going, he read the passage from James. Do you have any sin to confess? And on the inside, I was so insulted that he would dare think that I had any sin to confess. Good pastor's wife. I kept it all inside. And there's more to that story, too. Probably 9 months later, this is God's grace. Somebody was talking, or I was hearing a woman give a message at a retreat, and she just, in passing, mentioned the sin of self-pity.
Yeah.
It was like,
been there, done that.
There it is. Lights going off.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I had a sin to confess.
Yes.
And this sin of self-pity. But back to the meeting. They were praying over me, laughing in prayer. It was the most beautiful prayer meeting I've ever been part of. But I'm in darkness at this point, in close to full-on rebellion. And all of a sudden, I mean, it's hard for me even to express this well without it sounding false, but I'm pretty much as steady of a person as they come, and I'm praying, and all of a sudden, their voices faded, and I think I saw, like, the edge of the throne of light that God's
love it.
On.
Love it.
Describe.
Love it. I believe you did.
Yep.
And I'm Pentecostal,
it's like,
though.
You know, here in California.
Yes.
It's a cloudy day.
Right.
And they open up and the
yes.
streams.
Yes.
Exactly
yes.
how it looked and felt
wow.
at the moment. And I hear
wow.
three words. Die. It's okay.
Wow.
It's okay. It's okay. But not sweet and syrupy. More stern, like my father would have been to me when he was trying to rescue me from running out in the street. And I knew in that moment that he was saying no. I just flooded with, and no, but I felt no disappointment, no fear. It's just like, oh, it's going to be okay.
I'm going to qualify. When you first said die, it's going to be okay. I was thinking D-I-E.
No.
But it's my name. The friendly way of saying your name. Die.
Yes.
Die.
Yes.
It's okay.
Yes. So in my family.
That was
yes.
good that you clarified
yes.
that.
Oh, I was like, what, die to
I'm
self?
I'm so glad you clarified. You're,
yes. Because I'm thinking, oh, die to self. It's
no,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
This.
Very good. Yes.
Warm intimacy
yes.
that I'd never experienced
yes.
before, even known, even understood, allowed myself to understand that's the relationship he wants.
But just a firm, kind, loving, it's okay.
Yes.
And like you said,
like,
the father's voice.
This.
A loving
yes.
father.
Yes,
voice.
Firm, mm-hmm. firm voice. That's a better word than
so
I use
powerful.
Stern. It's more like
yeah.
firm
mm-hmm.
and secure and...
And the cute little name for you instead
I know.
Of my daughter.
I yeah. know.
Hi,
I know.
It's me, the Lord.
And this is while I'm
oh,
testing
beautiful.
Him. I'm doing
yes,
everything
yes, yes.
wrong. Everything.
And this
and
goes
trench.
Against your philosophy.
Oh.
You're
yeah.
doing everything wrong.
Yeah. Yes, blew it away.
Yeah.
Blew it away. But it also gave me the deepest sense of who I am without the grace of God.
I know that feeling.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
you open your book with a story.
I know, it's a terrible story.
You unleashing and it is
It's not
the
a
most...
terrible story. Cheryl, tell us the title of your book.
Yes.
A Woman's Battle for Grace.
Yes.
And I do open with a a story of me without grace, and it's not pretty.
It's not. That's why it's a good story, because we can all relate to it.
It's not pretty.
Thank you for starting with that.
Absolutely. Appalled at who, you know, I think you used the word that you were appalled at what was coming out of your mouth. I was appalled at who I really was when you strip all the pretense away and all the trying hard away and all the rules away. I was just stark naked, and it was ugly.
Mm.
And to have him then in that state intervene and rescue me, Psalm 40, you know, that he reached in and pulled me out of the pit that I had dug for myself. My life will never be the same. I feel like that's when, you know, I know theologians argue about these things, but it seemed to me, because I was not the same person the next day, that was a baptism of the Spirit.
I love it.
Some way that I'd been saved, I'd been baptized, but it seemed to me that was something so significant that I would never be the same.
And I always believe that the baptism of the Spirit is actually just going the deeper level.
Yeah.
It's just saying, Lord, I'm all yours. I'm all in.
Yes.
I've always said that faith, you know, everyone has a different definition of faith. And what the Lord really put on me, and, you know, there's some that's, you know, it's allegiance. You probably read that book, you know, faith is allegiance. And I said, no, it's so much more. It's so much more. But the Lord really put on my heart, it's investment. How invested are you in Jesus? And I think that what you're talking about is when you say, all right, this is it. I'm fully invested.
Yeah.
I'm going to invest.
So too.
There used to be a song we used to sing like, less of me and more of you.
You know who wrote that?
No.
My son.
What?
No.
Yes. John Mark wrote that song.
Well, I actually really love that song.
Uh-huh. His cry to God.
Me, yes.
And, you know, I had been praying since my kids were born that they would grow up to love the Lord with all their mind, soul, and strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, honestly, now I see, because especially not knowing what the millennial generation would be like, the next generation, they would have rejected my rules-based faith.
Absolutely.
It was rigid.
Absolutely.
It was judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
That happened when John Mark was 5 years old.
Mm.
And I have no doubt in my mind, I mean, the diagnosis of going deaf. I have no doubt in my mind that he would not be the man he is now. Rebecca wouldn't be following Jesus. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, Matthew. But the fact that they saw this broken version of me being transformed all the years that they were growing up, growing closer and closer, transformed not by another rule, but because of time spent with Jesus out of total desperation.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I couldn't survive this lengthy time of going deaf without him with me every moment of every day.
Mm.
And now,
That's again the full investment.
It is.
I am so invested in you. You have to help me walk. You have to be my ears. Yeah. You have to take over completely.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like a moment of consecration.
Yes.
That we draw near to God. He draws near to us.
Yeah.
And we have said, I'm all yours. I want to be yours. And he says, okay, let me show you what that will look like.
Yeah.
I'm going to consecrate you, which is really putting you through the fire.
Yes.
So that what remains that comes out of the other is gold.
Mm-hmm.
And and that honors him. Then the glory is all his.
It's all his. It's not my
rules. There's nothing we can say. I accomplished this. I followed this rule. And therefore, that's why God's pleased with me. No, no, no. He consecrates us for his work and puts us through the fire.
I love that word, consecration. It's such an old-fashioned term, but it encapsulates the whole thing.
So when did you realize that you were changing?
I think almost immediately. I mean, it was a self-forgetfulness that
I had
before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of some of the hurts of my childhood, I was more self-defensive. And all of a sudden, I didn't feel the need to perform in the same way. In fact, the next morning, I got up and I read Psalm 40 just in my regular Bible reading. And verse 6 says, and mine eyes, in the old New American Standard, and mine eyes thou hast opened.
Mm.
And I thought, I mean, mine ears.
Yes.
My ears thou hast opened. And I thought, oh, maybe he's going to heal me after all. And so I took a little pencil that was on me and I tapped the coffee table and couldn't hear it.
Mm.
And I thought, no, this is this new song he's put in my mouth. This is what to cling to. So it felt instant. And then took a long time, is taking the rest of my life to trickle down into my very character.
But how appropriate, because this is part of the ministry that God's given you with the honesty with your children.
Yeah.
The honesty. And that was one thing. You know, my mother came from a very traumatic background, and she came with a lot of baggage that didn't ever get completely worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so good at saying, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I mean, just so, like, I am sorry. I mean, she'd say, I am sorry. You didn't deserve, it wouldn't be right away, but she'd come back and say, you didn't deserve that reaction. I want you to know, this is not your problem. This is my problem. And as a kid, I'm like,
oh my gosh,
I don't know what to do with that. Are you sure I'm not partially responsible? I mean, I am hyperactive, you know? And she'd be like, no, you're the beloved of the Lord, and it's me. And the Lord's working on me. And so she taught me to be really good at apologizing to my children. But I love this. But I know that, when did you have your surgery for the implants?
Okay, so that was when I turned 40. So between,
oh my goodness,
thank God to slow it down so that I could at least raise my kids and have
right.
some hearing. In the meantime, the cochlear implants the science behind that was being perfected.
Okay.
I mean, you used to have to carry around a big, heavy battery pack to be able to, that had to be renewed constantly, that would then, you had a wire up to this.
I remember those. I had a teacher in high school that had one.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm sorry to say that we kind of, our class played a few jokes on him where we'd all hum and he'd think there were bees in the room or it was terrible.
Okay, I have a different opinion of your youth. You were not Christy.
I was one of the hummers.
Yes.
And he would look out the windows. Is there a beehive or something? But it was such a different era than so
it
when
was.
You're 40, there's enough technology that
so,
you can
yes,
have the internet.
And I became a candidate. Now, I had years of doing these hearing tests. So the first year that my audiologist was sure I would qualify, you had to have lost all the hearing in both ears as far as being able to understand anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I beat the test because I had it practically memorized by that time. I'd done so many of them. I had to wait a whole year before I could be tested again. That was a really agonizing year.
Mm.
I had to be very humble and say, I've got to stop competing against the test. And then the very next year, I had the implant surgery. And within 3 weeks, it was like, oh, my goodness.
This is a whole
different world.
Did you learn?
Relearning how to hear.
Did you learn sign language or to read lips?
I had the best audiologist in the world.
Mm.
And she said, Diane, your world is the hearing world. If you learn sign language, you're going to limit yourself.
Wow.
So she just, and she had done her PhD on this new technology. And she said, hang in there. This is going to be something that is in your future. And it was worth the wait.
Okay. I did have a friend who would read lips who is deaf. One time at the back of the church, a friend and I were talking about this person that was a little sketchy who had come in the church, and we were just kind of like, I don't know, you know, what do you think we should do? And all of a sudden she comes running down the aisle and she goes, I think so too.
Oh, dear.
We got to pray. And we're like,
I love it.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
did you naturally pick up reading lips? Because
you just naturally. I had a house full of children.
Sure.
Oh, right.
Sure.
You do everything
you can. Just look in their little face and try and figure out what they're trying to ask for.
You work really hard at it. Yeah. And I just missed a lot. The last 5 years were so lonely because it was just very, very difficult for me to be part of a conversation.
And now you said your children would not be who they are if you had not gone through that.
I really believe
How so?
That. Because I don't, mostly because I think they would have rejected the faith that I was handing down to them. It wasn't a faith-based, it wasn't a grace-based faith. It was a rules-based faith. And knowing how intelligent they are, that they're world-changing kind of thinker sort of people.
Yeah.
That would not have sat well with my kids.
Okay, we're going to come back for one more episode.
We have to.
And in this episode, I want to just talk about the ministry that Diane and her husband have mm-hmm. now. And we're going to probably skip a lot of years because her husband was also a pastor. But we'll talk about their ministry now. And she has some extra things just to share with you, the listeners.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.